Welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm your host, Ruth Amos. 1 Thessalonians 4 says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. In this podcast, I chat to all sorts of normal Christians, asking them just how they live their quiet lives and how they integrate their faith into their daily life. I hope that by listening, you will be encouraged to go out and live your own quiet life to the glory of God. You can find the episode show notes, the Quiet Life blog, and other resources at ruthamos.com.au. That's ruthamos.com.au. Now let's get on with the show. Well, hello. Welcome to A Quiet Life. It's really good to have you here. I'm so glad you're with us. I'm Ruth Amos from ruthamos.com.au, and this is episode 5 of A Quiet Life, and as I record this, it's Wednesday the 7th of November 2018. So today's guest is Sean. I had such a great talk to Sean, full of laughter, maybe even some tears for you. There was great depth in it, and I think that one of the things that really stood out to me from Sean's interview is just how much he's depending on the leading of God in his life, which, I mean, God wants to lead us all through every part of our day, and it's just really exciting to hear how God's led him. Right, so this week in the Amos household, well, today we're all so light and airy, it's amazing that we're not lifting off foundations of our house and floating away to South America. I mean, it's great. So Caleb's exams are over and he's done. And yes, he's floating around the house saying, I can think again. And Moz's grade 12's got a beautiful send-off last Friday. It was just a really lovely time together. And it was awesome. So he's got a bit more headspace as well. I'm still trying to get my books out. I've done all the proofs from the proofreading now, and now I'm working on just formatting and all the other little bits and pieces and getting them uploaded to websites and things like that. So it's coming, but I've still got things happening in my life. But if you remember from last week, or you may not know, you can listen to last week's, but if you remember from last week, I was at the Global Leadership Summit last week, last Thursday night and Friday, and it was a really great time of teaching. I'm very glad I went. I wrote on my blog, which is a quiet life blog at wordpress.com, or you can find it through ruthamos.com.au. I wrote about something I disagreed with, and so I thought today I'd be really positive and talk about some of the things that I did agree with or that I learnt from the Global Leadership Summit. So it was pretty amazing. Danny Meyer talked about the 5 A's of mistakes, which are: be aware, acknowledge, apologize, act on it, so do something about it or fix it, and then apply additional generosity. So I thought that was really good, because we often talk about, oh, from failure, you need to just pick up and keep going, but it was good to talk about, you know, exactly how you can act on that. There was somebody called Marcus Ankerson, I think. He's a soccer coach, and he talked about looking at the underlying reasons of both success and failure. So if something's successful, why is it successful? And if it's a failure, why is it a failure? And you can learn from both of those things, and not just assume that because it was successful once, it's going to keep going. You need to think about why it was successful and whether you can keep that going. David Livermore talked about cultural intelligence. Oh, he was very good. He was very good. He said it's a lot more complicated than just curiosity and knowledge. And that, you know, just because you've got a diverse group doesn't mean it's going to be more innovative. You need to have some cultural intelligence to work out how to make people play well together, I guess, how to help people to talk to each other. Carla Harris, love Carla Harris. And I'm sure all these people are available on YouTube and different places if you just look them up. So Carla Harris talked about bringing your whole self to the table. Not that you need it on display all at once, but you need your whole self to be there in case you're needed. So she talked about Carla Harris, the singer, the prayer warrior, the Wall Street investment banker, and all parts of herself that she brings to every meeting so that she can relate to people and talk to people. Simon Sinek talked about finite and infinite games. Look, you can Google that and it's worth it. We are in an infinite game, not a finite game in life. And Craig Groeschel, he started and finished the summit for us, and he talked about being an anticipatory leader, so anticipating the future, so then you don't have to react to what's happening, you've already anticipated and worked towards it. So that was really, really good. And then it's been just a fantastic week of teaching for me, because yesterday I went to go and see someone called Canon J. John, and again, you can Google him, he's there on YouTube. And I just want to pick out one thing that he said. Look, I had 4 pages of notes from him. He was fantastic. So, so much wisdom. So glad I went. Anyway, one of the things he said was that his teaching is a bit like a fish dinner. And when you're eating fish, yes, you've got the fish. You've got the fish bones and the skin. And, you know, some people eat the skin. Some people don't eat the skin, but nobody eats the bones. And you just take the bones from the fish dinner and you put them to the side. And so he said at the end of his workshop, if you've got to pick a bone with me, I don't want to hear it. Put the bones to the side, eat the meat of the talk. And I thought that was really good. And I thought it applied actually to this podcast, because I'm interviewing people, I'm not interviewing deep theologians, and I'm not actually asking you to agree with everything that my guests say. And I would just like to ask you, don't pick a bone with my guests or me or what we say. There's a wide variety of people, and as I say, I'm not interviewing highly trained theologians or whatever. I'm interviewing normal people, and we're all on a journey. So I just like to ask you, don't pick a bone with me or my guests. Put the bones to one side and enjoy the meat, because I'm sure there's always something out of every one of these interviews that you're going to get a lot from, even if you don't agree with absolutely everything. So I just love that that analogy. I think that this Quiet Life podcast is a series of fish dinners, and I hope that you enjoy all of them. Okay, so one final thing I wanted to say, this is a long introduction today, but it's a slightly shorter interview, so I'm sure that's fine, isn't it? That's fine. Tell me if you think I need to do less of an introduction or more, or I'd love to hear your feedback. I'd love to hear your feedback. Having said all that about picking bones, I'd still love to hear your feedback. I'd love to hear from you, and you know that you can email me or send me a comment on my website or my Facebook page or whatever. But I was talking to a few people about how to subscribe, and I realised that when I started listening to podcasts that I didn't know how to subscribe either, and I'm very grateful to Sheridan Voisey for giving me a how-to. So here's my how-to, and I'll put it in the show notes. If you want to subscribe on your computer, you just go to www.ruthamos.com.au and click on the podcast link, and then below the play window, so there's a window with a play button in it, below that there is a link for iTunes or Stitcher. Click on that, you're in, depending on what you use. So if you have iTunes on your computer, click on iTunes, it'll subscribe you. That's good. If you prefer to listen on your phone, and I do because I just put my earphones in and listen while I go for a walk or while I'm doing the washing up or hanging clothes out or whatever, what you need to do is go to your Play Store or your App Store, depending on whether you're iPhone or Android, whatever, so Play Store for Google Play or App Store for iPhone, and just search for free podcast listening apps. So for doesn't matter if you're an iPhone or Android, some good apps are Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Castbox, Podbean, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Spotify. So if you've just got an iPhone, you can use Overcast, Castro 3, Downcast, doesn't sound very positive, Downcast, anyway, Podcruncher, iCatcher, Castaway 2, or Apple Podcasts. So it's actually not iTunes anymore, it's Apple Podcasts, but I haven't updated everything yet. That change from iTunes to Apple Podcasts just happened just after I started this podcast, so I'll get there probably next year sometime, knowing me. And if you've just got an Android phone, then Google Podcasts, Podcast Republic, Podcast Addict, Beyond Pod, Dog Catcher, Player FM, Pod Kicker, and Antenna Pod are all pod catching apps that work. And I use Podkicker on mine, but any of those will work. And once you get on there, so download the app, open it up, go into the search bar and search for A Quiet Life, and it should come up. It's got a nice green little square that says A Quiet Life, and hit subscribe, and then you've got it on your phone popping in every Wednesday and you can listen. And one final thing, if I can beg you to leave a review or a rating on Apple Podcasts so that other people can find my podcast, that would be fantastic. Hope that you really enjoy listening, and I'll look forward to chatting with you again next week. I will probably not say half as much in the introduction next week, but I had a lot to say. I had a lot of learning, as I said, this week, and it's been a very, very good week. So I hope that you really enjoy this interview with Sean. See you next week. Welcome, everyone. Today we have Sean with us, which is very exciting for me. Sean is married to Yvonne, and they have three boys. And Sean often takes out kids' spot, which is quite fun. And the one I remember most is the one with all the whale sound effects. It was the whale and the cork on the ocean.
That was a long time ago, right?
I know, but that was fun. Well, I was going to mention the one where your outdoor fire pit got stolen, but then I thought I'd go with the whale. So as you can see, it's quite fun. You can find them sometimes on stclementskingston.org.au, which is our church website. Sometimes they put them up. Anyway, and Sean works as a chaplain at one of our local hospitals, and he runs his own podcast, I found out. So this is the first time I've interviewed a podcaster.
Oh, and this is the first time I've been interviewed on another podcast.
So excited. So cool. We'll see how we go, what we learn. All right, serious question.
Mm.
How did you become a Christian?
How did I become a Christian? I was born into a semi-Christian family. So my mum is, my mum became a Christian when she was pregnant with me.
Okay.
And so that's not true. She became a Christian just before she was pregnant with me. So she says, Sean, you were my first Christian pregnancy.
Right.
So I was prayed over and loved in a Christian context from the very beginnings of my life.
Sure.
She raised me in that way, and my dad is not, faith and him haven't found each other. And,
yes.
And they, and at some point I remember being a primary school age child, and I thought, I want this for me, not just from what mum and dad, or from what mum says and from what happens at church. So I remember making a commitment at some kind of event. And then it wasn't until I was in high school when my parents went along to Uniting Church in Brisbane, and it didn't work for me at all. I didn't like it, didn't like the youth group, didn't like anything about it, and I stopped going. And I never realised, but there was a part of me that just yearned for something beyond the temporal, and I wanted something to invest into that was bigger than that. And I said to one of my friends at school, can I come to church with you? Because he went to church. I went to a Lutheran school, and there was a church there, and I knew he went. And so I started attending church, and from high school, that's when I really, really owned my faith, apart from my family, apart from anything else. And it just went from there.
So it's almost like, you say God doesn't have any grandchildren. You had to sort of, in a way, reject your parents' faith to find your own
faith. Well, not so much reject, but find a way that was authentic to me.
Yeah, for sure.
Sounds like a very first world kind of a journey.
Yeah, well, we don't have that advantage of being starving anyway. Oh, dear. This is the most interesting interview yet. It's all coming out now. So you work as a chaplain.
Mm.
Is that what it's called?
I'm called the pastoral care manager.
Right.
So I run the pastoral care department. So traditionally, I'm going to get technical.
Okay.
Chaplaincy is a faith-based service that comes in and shares in a faith context.
Mm-hmm.
So I work for a Catholic hospital, and so Catholic healthcare believes in the spiritual well-being of its patients, And so they employ some non-denominational, non-faith-specific pastoral care staff. And I'm in charge of the pastoral care department. Yeah. Right. So there's seven of us, and they are remarkable human beings from a variety of different faith backgrounds. Mm. And, amazing work gets done.
Yeah, I can believe it.
And when I walk in with the term pastoral care, I walk in and people say, oh, hello, pastor. I say, no, I'm not a pastor. And they say, okay. Oh, no, I've got to go. I'm talking to the pastor. No. It's better than, oh, hello, Father. No, I'm not the Father. No. Yes, Father, I understand you. No, I'm not a priest. Okay, Father.
Yeah.
Whatever you need me to be today, I guess. Okay. Crikey.
Yeah. So how did you choose to do that?
I didn't choose to do that, Ruth.
Yeah. How did it choose you?
How long do we have? So let's go back. I was trying to work out what I would do at university, and I said, right, God, if you want to have a role in my life, here's your chance, because I got no idea what I'm meant to do. Speak, Lord, for I'm listening. And two words popped into my mind, social sciences. What is that? So I looked it up and it said psychology. So I thought, oh, crikey, okay. Mm-hmm. And then I prayed and God said, you know, talk to some other people. And they all said, oh, social sciences, I think, is what, you know, would be great for you. I'm like, oh, okay. So I studied and I worked as a psychologist for a decade. And for all the time I worked as a psychologist, I felt as though it was a rich kind of preparation for something else. But I never felt like that was my destination, which is a really weird feeling to be in a profession, but to feel like this isn't where I'm going to end up.
And for that length of time.
Yeah, and it was a really strong sensation. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, I need to get out, and it wasn't, I don't like this, but it was, this is not my destiny as a career.
Mm-hmm.
And through a long and complicated series of events, God called me into working for a church. So I was working as a lay minister in a church when I don't like organized church structure. I find it very difficult, and I've got lots of problems with it. And here I was working for the church, and I think God's got an ironic sense of humor. And then 3 years ago, again, another door opened and God said, go to Tasmania. I'm like, what? Tasmania?
You're in Brisbane, in Queensland.
Yeah, why would we do that? You have rocks in your head to move to Tasmania, but it was this profound sense of calling.
Mm.
Said, well, we can't move to Tassie without a job. And so Yvonne hopped online, and within a minute, like the first minute, she goes, Sean, I think I've found the perfect job for you.
Okay.
Said, what? Said that they want someone that's got a background in psychology and someone who's worked in full-time ministry to come and lead the pastoral care department. No, that's my CV.
Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah.
And that in the context of a whole lot of other, let's go with that, very significant kind of signs, God saying go. So, ta-da, here we are. Yeah.
Well, I'm very grateful for that.
So am I, Ruth. So am I.
And you're not freezing anymore.
Yes, I am. But I've just stopped complaining about it now. And we're building a very warm house.
Oh, awesome. So being in a Catholic hospital and working in this area means that, because I know that a lot of chaplains, school chaplains, for example, they have to be very careful about how their faith interacts with their work, even though they're chaplains.
Yep.
So do you have those sort of same strictures on you, or you're...
No, so I'm employed... So a lot of the school chaplains have got government funding for the chaplaincy positions, whereas my funding is entirely by the hospital. So I don't create any profit for the hospital. I just suck it up and consume it and spend it on food and mortgage and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
So we get no government funding as a hospital. So basically there's no restrictions on what I do or say, except for everything I do has to be patient-led.
Yeah.
So every encounter has to be what's going on for this person lying in the bed, what is their issue, what's the crisis that they're facing, how can I touch them as a holistic being with a spiritual identity, and how can I nurture that spirit? And if it's in a Christian context, then I can do that overtly as a Christian person with a Christian patient, if they are agnostic or Hindu, or I've met people who are dying who have said, I'm so excited about dying because I go to be with, let's call him Fabio, let's go with that. I get to be with Fabio, my spiritual partner, who died in the 1500s in South America, and he and his two spiritual guides are waiting with open arms to welcome me when I die, and I can't wait to pass through the threshold and be with Fabio again.
Wow.
And I sit there as a person with a very Christian-centric worldview.
Yeah.
And part of inside of me is screaming, tell her about Jesus.
Yeah.
And another part of me is going, don't you dare condescend her by saying your spirituality is meaningless and let me tell you the truth.
Mm.
So at times it's very, very conflicted as I'm literally with people on the cusp of life and death transitions, and my job is not to convert them. My job is to be Christ to them.
Mm.
Which can be very challenging, and it really tests my faith in the fact that God doesn't need me to be the beginning, the middle, and the end of His reaching out to people, but I am one part of a very big narrative of love that God has shared with this person in their life.
Yeah,
which can be humbling and difficult.
Yeah, but it's something we all need to remember, I think, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes we feel like we hold the whole burden of evangelism on our shoulders, and just to remember that God doesn't actually need us, but He chooses to use us.
Mm.
So
I, at times it's very difficult, but at other times it's incredibly freeing, because I've prayed with many, many patients, and for somebody to be struggling, and I know they're a person of faith, I say, can I pray for you? And it's the most wonderful thing to sit with a stranger and pray through really intimate issues of their life struggles that are front and center. As a lie in a hospital bed, there is no more vulnerable place than a hospital bed or a prison cell, I guess. But to be in that space and have nothing but time stretching out in front of them for days and days and days as they lie there feeling sick and vulnerable, the big issues come to the fore, and to be able to be there with them in that time and that space is a profound privilege.
Absolutely. Do you have any stories that were particularly meaningful stories to you?
I guess the first death that I facilitated was particularly profound for me, and it was the day that I started drinking whiskey. Because at the end, I was shaking. I rang up Yvonne because I'd been wanting to buy a bottle of Tasmanian whiskey. I said, today's the day I need a stiff drink. I'm not recommending that as a coping strategy, but oh, wow.
Can we just be really clear by what you mean by facilitated death?
That's right. I said, you want me? No. So it was interesting. I actually got a phone call from a granddaughter, and she said, my grandmother's dying. And I don't know if she knows Jesus. Go and pray with her now.
Wow.
And all the alarm bells are going off about, you know, the conundrum that I was speaking about before. And I said, I will go and I'll pray for your grandmother. And I found her, and she was lying in bed near death, and her daughter, the mother of the person who called me, so the three generations of women, were sitting with her, holding her hand, and introduced myself, and I said, your daughter rang me and she said I should come here and check on you. And as it turns out, they were all strong Christian women.
Fantastic.
And had been all their life. And this lady was lying there, and as she was dying, the daughter was alone with her mum, with no other family members there, and finding this incredibly difficult. And I said, would you like me to pray? And she said, please, would you? And I held the grandmother's hand and I held the mother's hand. And as I was praying, committing this lady's spirit to God, she breathed her last breath and died.
Wow.
And it was just, there are some moments that kind of reach out of the ordinary narrative of life and touch something eternal. And I've been around death before, but I've never been in prayer for someone's soul as it passes from their body into God's care. It was yeah, was yeah, big, man, really big.
Yeah.
There are some days that you don't forget. And you, and your first death holding someone's hand on the ward is one of them for me. Yeah,
yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And that brings up something else too, is that you're not just with the patients, you're with the families as well. So that must bring a whole other...
For sure. And friends and... Yeah, anyone who's there. And so every time there's a medical emergency, a code blue or a MET call, which is what they're called, when basically they hit the red button and the people run with the crash cart, I go as well.
Okay.
Or someone from my team goes as well.
Mm.
Not to bless them as they're passing beyond the nether realms, but to if there's a family member in the room, often they get kicked out. And they land in the passageway and their loved one has just ceased to, you know, have the normal signs of life and they're tripping out. So... Yeah, that's very good to be able to be there. And even just on Friday, I was walking, I was chairing a meeting and somebody was late and I was going to find them and I'm power walking and this hand reaches out and grabs me as I'm walking past the waiting area. And it's this lady who had a MET call and her husband was kicked out of the room and I spent a morning with the husband as she was going from place to place to place and I became quite close with them as a couple. And she was so glad to see a friendly face as she came in to have further surgery. It's really sweet to have an ongoing connection with people who come in for care.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you do much with children?
Hospitals are full of old people.
Yeah.
So 95% of patients are elderly or beyond retirement age and up.
Yeah.
No, that's not true. But most of the children who come in are not complex patients. They're there for grommets and tonsils and, you know, broken arms. So they are in and out. So generally they'll come in, they'll have surgery, then they're groggy and you know, for the rest of the day and then they're out the next morning. Yeah. So there's very little opportunity to be with kids.
Absolutely. I mean, I ask that because I've seen you, like, dress up as... You did a Star Wars thing or something.
Yes.
May the 4th.
Yes, no, that's all for the grown-ups.
That's all for the grown-ups.
They loved it. They loved it. My goodness, it was so much fun.
Yeah. So it's not all deep.
And as well as caring for patients and their families, our role as pastoral carers is also care for the carers, so to care for the staff members.
Right.
So a lot of the work that I do as manager is facilitating issues in other parts of the hospital with, excuse me, with staff members.
I can think of many workplaces that could do with a bit of pastoral care.
Absolutely.
Like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure.
It's lovely to be in a space where we are there. And we've had some crises recently and the CEO said, "Now this is big and I want all of you to know to the management team of the hospital, Sean is here and his team to care for you and your team." So we're recognised from the top down as an integral part of that, which is such a great validation of the work we do.
Cool. And do you, I didn't ask this, I didn't write this question down, so just so you know.
I don't have a written preparation. You can't.
I was just thinking about, so my husband works at a Christian school, they have a devotion time in the morning and stuff.
Yep.
I mean, do you have that sort of set up or do you, and or do you find that you get up at 4:30 in the morning and do an hour long devotion before you start the day?
So what's interesting is when you have a multi-faith staff, devotions look very different.
Right.
And I find that very challenging.
So it's not just multi-denominational, it's actually multi-faith.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, okay.
So... Yeah. So, yeah, they're very open to Christian concepts, but similarly to be an inclusive team, I need to be open to them sharing what's significant to them. So for me, my time is I follow the Daily Audio Bible podcast, which reads the Bible in a year, and I'm now in my third year of doing that. So I'll do that in the morning either if I'm going for a walk or exercising at home or sometimes on the drive into work or, so I'll have my time of Bible reading, in quote, and then prayer.
I like that idea a lot.
Yeah, and, you know, it's going through the Bible on a daily basis. I've tried daily Bible reading and I find it so difficult to be consistent long term. But this, for the first time, I found something that really works for me.
Yeah.
And at the end of the Bible reading, Brian, who does the reading, has been doing it for, I think, 13 years.
Right.
And so for him, he's so familiar with the overarching narrative of the Bible. So at the end of each reading, you know, we do Old Testament, New Testament, Psalms and Proverbs.
Hmm.
So he'll wrap it up together and draw out elements from each and in the overarching themes. And oh, it's just glorious.
So can you think off the top of your head what that's called?
Daily Audio Bible.
Daily Audio Bible.
With Brian Harden.
All right. I'll put it in the show notes as well. Yeah, for sure. Sure that'd be helpful to
more than one person. Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. It is amazing. A friend put me onto it, and it's been the biggest life gift.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah. And every year on my anniversary of starting, when we get to one of the great Old Testament stories where they walk into battle singing praise songs, and when they arrive, the two opposing enemies have killed each other. And that's my story. That was the first day I listened. Right. So whenever I hit that story, I text her and I say, thank you so much for putting me onto this. Another year's gone by and I've just been so blessed by it.
Sweet. That is really cool. Okay, so when would you say you feel closest to God?
When do I feel closest to God? Do you know, this might be bleeding another question into it. Yes. But the thing I love most about our faith in our God, which flies in the face of so much of what is misunderstood about Christianity, is that God is at his greatest when he is defeated, dying on a cross.
Hmm.
God achieved his greatest achievements in saving humanity in that moment of utter despair, agony, isolation and surrender and vulnerability. So I feel closest to God when I find myself in a low point and I don't look up to see a God who hovers on a golden throne looking down at me. But when I'm at my lowest point, I look down and I see a broken, beaten Jesus who looks up at me and he says, I get what this is like, Sean. I've been here and I'm here with you. I was here before you landed in this valley, waiting at the bottom of your pit to embrace you in this moment. And for me, I get goosebumps even just thinking about it. But for me, I feel closest to God when I arrive at a point of utter frustration and I look and God doesn't just empathize with me, but he was waiting for me at the point of despair to embrace me in that moment. Mm. And even when things are good, for me to be able to reflect and say, you know, to share the mountaintop experiences with God, but to appreciate that this is not God at God's best.
Mm.
This is God celebrating something great, but God's greatest achievement wasn't achieved on a mountaintop, on a throne, on a cloud. It was in the mire, in the bottom of a valley, that God won that for me.
It's just so hard to wrap our head around, you know, God's economy and God's way of doing things is just completely opposite to ours, isn't it? It's just incredible to...
Yes.
Yeah, no, it's good. And I'm assuming that's the one thing that you wish everybody knew as well.
Yeah, do you know... I wish everybody just had. I wish everybody knew that it's not what they do or what they bring to the table that matters, but it's who they are. And it's the fact that they are wholly loved and acceptable in the kernel that exists inside of them, apart from whatever they achieve, whatever we think we bring to the table is so not what makes us loved.
Yeah.
And that God reaches out to us and just the magnitude of his love and his grace before we even accept it, before we even choose to acknowledge him, that love is there. And I wish people knew that they don't have to attain any level of excellence. They just need to open their arms and say, thank you. And I feel like, you know, you talk about God's economy and I hadn't heard that phrase, but it's so beautiful because our economy is so inverted compared to God's economy. And we often superimpose our inverted economy onto God's economy.
For sure.
And miss the point. And even though we get the point intellectually, we miss the point. And I probably, for me, that's the one thing I wish people could get, is that it's not about what I do and how clever I am and how much I love Jesus and how loudly I sing those songs and how good I am with the actions with the Chaos Kids. That means nothing. And it's not even, that's not even how dedicated I am to Jesus that makes him love me. It's, I'm his child and he adores me no matter how much of a buffet I am.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I'll go and soak in that, I think, for a while now. Thanks so much, Sean.
Are we done?
We're done. That's it. Oh. That was the whole lot. Unless you've got something more you want to say. I mean, I can listen on.
No, look, I don't even know how to wrap up. For me personally, I think probably for me what I find so hard is so often our faith gets caught up in religiosity, and it's so hard for us to share authentic love without it getting lost in people's familiarity with Christendom and all of the misunderstandings that they have. So for me, my life mission is to present Jesus in a way that doesn't look like a church product.
Yes.
But my goal in my life, my overarching goal, is to how do I share Jesus in a way that people aren't turned off by before they've even received it.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
And I think you doing these sorts of things where we're able to just share our story and encourage each other to not play the game, but to be the person that we're made to be, I think is wonderful. So good on you, Ruth.
Well, thank you.
And
very much.
You make a very good cup of tea.
Excellent. I really do. Lots of practice there.
Yeah, good on you.
Cool. All right, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope this has been encouraging for you. I want to especially thank Catherine Joy Music for the theme music. If you would like to help me fund this podcast, you can find me at patreon.com/quietlife and help me out for as little as $1 a month. If you want to contact me, you can email Ruth at ruthamos.com.au or find me on Facebook at Ruth Amos Author or tweet me at A Quiet Life. I'd love to hear from you. God bless. See you next week.